It's the network break. Brew a coffee and spin up a stack of virtual donuts and join us for this Packet Pushers podcast on the latest news from the tech industry with analysis, opinion, insight and the occasional rant. I'm your host, Greg Farrow, standing in for Drew Conry-Murray because he's off gallivanting around the countryside and feeling a little bit rougher for wear. How are you today, Mr. Conry-Murray?
I'm calling from an undisclosed location on the West Coast and I'm at the mercy of hotel Wi-Fi, so we'll see how this goes.
Fingers crossed.
Otherwise, I'm feeling great, despite how my voice might sound.
You've been talking too much? It's that we're leaving home thing?
Yeah. So many people to talk to, so many hands to shake. Right. And we went out to a baseball game last night, so there was also some shouting.
We should save that for the show, really, shouldn't you?
I guess I should. I'll do a little shouting.
And also with us today is Mike Fratto. Mike, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be on Packet Pushers again.
Welcome back. It's good to have you here. Well, this episode of The Network Break is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Enhance your technology aptitude. IT Pro TV is a resource for keeping your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 70% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/networkbreak, all one word, and use the code NETWORKBREAK30. And also, join the Packet Pushers at Interop Las Vegas for the Future of Networking Summit on May 2nd and 3rd. It's a deep dive into the technologies and trends that will affect the next 5 to 10 years of networking. Use the code PPushers in the marketing code field when you register and get 25% off any pass at the conference. You can go to interop.tech.ubm.com/LV/2016 and use the code PPushers in the marketing code.
And we'll have all those links in the show notes.
Yes, and lots of links in the show notes today. Well, let's kick off today's show. Bare metal switching continues to go up, down, and all around. This article from IHS suggests that it's actually stalled, even though the networking market is up 6%. What is it, or what's all this?
Yeah, apparently this is coming from IHS Global Insights, the global data center network market that includes everything, switches, ADCs, WAN optimization. It grew 6% in 2015 to $11.8 billion. But they noticed a stall in white box switching, the ports. And I thought that was interesting. That's why I pulled this out, because all we talk about is white box, white box, white box. However, you know, even though it says it's stalled, I guess it's saying it's stalled because the cloud service providers are transitioning to Tomahawk units so they can get that 25 and 50 gig-y goodness. Mm. But they do say over the long term, white box is going to continue to grow, and that's going to harm the purpose-built folks.
I would have thought a lot of the cloud providers are waiting to switch up to 25 gig, so they would hold off on their 10 gig white box purchases.
Yeah, that's the reason. That's what they're attributing to this "quote unquote" stall.
We're talking about cloud scale companies, so I think there's going to be sort of a sine wave of share. I mean, they're big companies, but you know they're going to make a big purchase, and then there's going to be a long period where they don't, and then there's going to be a big purchase, and then so still a small number, which is going to affect these growth numbers. But I think you need to look 2 to 3 years over time to see them going up and to the right.
I guess you only buy switches once when you buy a data center, really.
Well, you buy switches and then you hang on to them for 3 to 5 years and then you buy more. You know, there's going to be the growth curve, right?
So yeah, I'm just saying, really, if you're a cloud provider, the only time you're buying them is when you refurb your data center. It's not like an enterprise, which is continually buying switches in bits and pieces and dribs and drabs.
Yeah.
Piecemeal instead of buying the whole thing at once.
Yeah.
Lack of efficiency. Well, so not surprising, I guess. The fact is that white box is slowing down is probably not a surprise and can be expected. Dell story continues to be the gift that keeps giving to everybody on the Packet Pushers, especially on this show, The Network Break. Last week, Japan's NTT Data buys Dell's IT services unit for a cool 3 billion buckaroonies. What's the story on this one?
We know that Dell is taking on about $43 billion in debt to make this EMC merger happen. And so they're also selling off some business units because of all that debt they're taking on. And part of that sale. It's been reported for a while that they were looking to maybe send off this business. And I think it was the Perot Systems business that Dell acquired a while ago. And now they're sending it out to NTT Data.
Acquired for $3.9 billion and sold for $3. Good work.
That's got to hurt. That's really got to hurt.
They got a few years out of it, but EMC also has its own professional services, so I wonder if that's included or if it's just overlap and they're trying to shed overlap.
I would have thought there's some politics in here too. EMC would have a fairly, it's fairly confident in its own abilities and confident of itself, and it would think that its professional services is going to be the best possible option going forward and to get rid of this one. And I know the Perot Systems business has been pretty heavily criticized in the past. Maybe there's some politics going on as well.
I'm sure EMC looked at this and said, hey, guys, if you're looking for stuff to sell, think about that one. The other thing that was interesting in the story is that it talked about the number of banks that are getting involved in the loans that, that Dell is taking out, and it's gone from 8 underwriters to 25. And that just strikes me as like it doesn't seem like, you know, frankly, a good sign when, you know, it's kind of like maxing out your credit cards and signing up for new ones and maxing those out. It's just 25 underwriters. That's a lot of people who are going to have their hands out in a couple of years.
Yeah, I read a financial article this week, and there's basically the arbitrages are moving in. They're starting to say that the VMware tracking stock that we've been talked about in the past is an excellent point for arbitraging. It's probably a 20% arbitrage opportunity in there. Don't worry about what arbitraging means. Just know that people are now going to – the financial speculators are getting close to moving in because it's a 4 to 6 month play for fast money. So it'll be interesting to see. Arista this week had another go, released a new product, a 100 terabit cloud networking product. The 7500R, which is, of course, the successor to the 7500E, and its precursor, the 7500. Somebody dropped a turbocharger and a supercharger on it and some big fat pipes, and then this thing actually goes a lot faster.
It's all about speed. Speed, speed, speed. Big, big, big.
Ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed. And they're calling it the universal spine. I love that, you know, sort of robust branding.
But basically everybody's silicon got bigger in the last 12 months. There's new chipsets from all the vendors. You know, you've got the Broadcom Jericho replacing the June for the internal stuff that goes inside the switch. Having that new silicon means you can start to do new things. There's a couple of unique things about it. One is the flex route feature. So what it actually does is a thing called selective route download. So if you exceed the number of TCAM entries in the silicon, you can actually have a feature where you say, well, I don't need all the routes sitting in TCAM if the routes aren't actually being used. So only load the ones that are being used in the TCAM and keep the rest in DRAM. A bit similar to what the QFX 10,000 has done in principle. But otherwise, it's just a tick of the silicon. It all got faster and better as far as I can read into the pitch.
I had a question. I mean, Greg, you've designed these big cloud networks and these service provider networks, and Arista really is trying to position the universal spine as a core replacement, right? An internet router replacement going up against, you know, Juniper and Cisco and to some extent Huawei globally. Does this universal spine tick all those boxes? Can it fit into a provider network and as a replacement?
Well, there's a couple of different markets in service providers that would use a chassis-based switch. Keep in mind, the enterprise doesn't need this anymore. Unless you're a certain type of company, you know, the enterprise could buy two of these and actually solve their data center needs for the next decade, pretty much.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of sales there in the enterprise. And coming back to what I said a minute ago, the cost of selling switches to the enterprise is very high because you have to have sales forces and partners and all that sort of stuff. So I think if you look at it from the service provider point of view, could be looking to replace some of their terabit routers in the backplane. So instead of buying CRSs or, you know, Juniper's MX, they could just start to use the Arista switch for that. It's Ethernet in, Ethernet out, and if it's just high-speed IP routing and you've got the tables, then certainly it's a possibility. I think some mid-tier carriers would certainly look at this if it's got the right features.
Yeah, they're also Arista's also trying to position this for the core deployments. The CO is data center. Again, they're looking. I mean, that was one of their big focuses on the, you know, on flex route and the high density, high capacity, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess how would I think about this? If you figure that most of the big carriers are moving away from IP routed cores to DWDM, the idea is that instead of having everything pulling into a single IP router that has, you know, hundreds of single interfaces and then doing that, you'd be better off using full mesh DWDM, like increase the size of your DWDM and create a DWDM in the core again, back where we were in the early 2000s, and then put terabit routers around the end, which gives you faster route, you know, less focus on the core and distributes the core around a bit more. This box would be good with that. And remember that about 6 months ago, Arista partnered with Infinera, which is a DWDM company, to start getting DWDM into its chassis. And also remember that Juniper recently bought BTI, which is an MPLS optical company. They did Ethernet to optical at the edge. And I can't help but wonder if that's sort of these vendors slowly reacting to that transition where optical is actually going to be the backbone, not IP routing over Ethernet. So, yeah, I don't see why this couldn't work. I'm not too sure about universal spine. Arista seems very fond of creating strange words for things that they then go and trademark. Flex
spline. Route.
Spline, yes.
Maybe the next one will be the universal spline.
Yeah.
The other thing we need to mention, and Arista probably doesn't want us to, but the fact that they are still in an ongoing dispute with Cisco regarding some intellectual property issues, and there's another shoe yet to drop. So I guess tip of the hat to Arista for, you know, steaming onward with new product releases, even as there are potential rough seas ahead.
Well, these pipelines are, what, 2 to 3 years long?
Yeah, so it's been going.
This hasn't happened post the litigation that Cisco initiated. This would have been way in the pipeline back then. You won't see the poop shit cleaned out for another 12 to 18 months yet.
Sure, but I have to think that, you know, if I'm a potential customer, I'm thinking, I'll just wait and see what happens.
Well, speaking of Cisco, the 6500 series continues to steam on. It seems like it's just never going to die. Today, we talk about the 6500 as the Catalyst 6800. But industry analyst Nick Lippis says that there's another 10 years to go in the 6500 series and will be around longer.
Yep.
Well, this is an article we're talking about from Network World, and it was a person just sort of talking, sort of rambling on about the invincibility of the 6500 series. Although I noticed it was peculiar to me that all of the data points he cites are from 2012, 4 years ago. So I'm just wondering what the genesis of this article was, why he decided to write about it now. And I mean, sure, 6500 is a rock, but it also seems like the way the market is moving, you know, eventually this rock is going to not be as big.
There's a myth that enterprises replace their equipment every 3 to 5 years, and that's simply not true. They replace their equipment oftentimes, if it's working, far longer. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'll still find Nortel branded switches, out in the network. Companies are still using it because they work. They work fine. Capacity is good. Why replace it? The 6500 was such a huge success for Cisco, and they continued to build for it, that companies have settled on it. They're not going to change. They're not going to update until they absolutely have to. For any new deals, Cisco's leading with the 6800, right? And it's backward compatible. Line cards are backward compatible to the 65, so they get some of that ability to use their line cards. But new chassis sales, they're leading with the 6800. And I think the only time that they're selling 6500s, new ones, is only in those cases where a company says, nope, we've standardized on this platform. That's the way it's got to be. We're not switching to anything new until we go through our 6 months.
You're not going to buy a 6500 because it doesn't do 10 gig. If it does, I think it does. Last time I checked it, I think the Supervisor 3 or 4 that went into it was like a 10 gig max. So
yeah,
if
light.
You want some sort of future in it, you know, 10 gig is really table stakes today. And you can buy a 48-port 10 gig switch for under $5,000 delivered, right? You know, so why would you buy a 6500 unless, you know, you're really, really backward? And when I say really, really backward, I'm talking about like armies, navies, government bodies where they've actually used the 65, you know, a Cisco switch as a part of their control system, then it needs to last for 30 years. And my understanding is that Cisco's making promises to these customers that this product will last multiple decades, and they're being paid to do that. And the reason that it will continue to exist is because it's in, you know, boats that have been built around it fundamentally, and refitting it would be enormously complicated.
Yeah, a lot of enterprises are in the exact same boat. I'm not saying it's a rational decision. I'm just saying it's an actual decision that a lot of companies will standardize on a product, and they'll stick to it until the very bitter end, until they're literally ripped out of their hands.
Well, that's going to be that's changing. I mean, the days of Spanning Tree forced us into that. Like the technology that we use in Spanning Tree forced us to always have a single core switch, and there was nothing we could do about the core switch. You couldn't change it, and replacing it required this sort of explosive upgrade. What I mean by that is you had to be willing to break everything to replace the core switch. So you would sit there and hatch the core switch until you absolutely had no other choice. The switch was clearly defective. You know, it's a bit like, you know, you've got 300,000 miles on your favorite car that you bought as a teenager, and now you're 45 and it's really time to get rid of it. You know?
But there's so many memories.
So many memories. It's such a great car. It's never let me down. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Well, let's take a quick spot to thank one of our sponsors. This episode of Network Break is brought to you by IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you can gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare you for IT certification and, in fact, to develop a whole bunch of skills around the place. Now, IT Pro TV, I've been and had a look at it myself. I've got an account. They've got a unique way of approaching sort of training where they do two people on the video. And what they do is they stream them live and then record them as they're delivered. A bit like a podcast in a sense. It's done live and then edited to punch out to you. And you can actually see them. You can watch them on your Chromecast, Roku, Amazon TV, Tablet TV, etc. And the course topics are quite wide, all the way from the basics, you know, the Comp TIA, ethical hacking, cryptography, and right the way up to CCNP security and Microsoft Server 2016 MCSE. Check out itpro.tv/networkbreak to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month, but we have a special offer. Try it free for 7 days when you sign up with our code NETWORKBREAK30, remember the 30, to check out their courses, live streams, and more. Once you sign up, you'll receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's $40 a month or $400 for an entire year. Visit itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code NETWORKBREAK30 to try it free for 7 days and 30% off the life of your account. Thanks to IT Pro TV for sponsoring the Packet Pushers and the Network Break. Mm-hmm. All right, let's jump into Cloud Router. Cloud Router is a software-based router, and this week they released a press release in a PDF, so it's really hard to sort of show it to you. It's an open-source project, but they showed that they were able to use a standard off-the-shelf server running some Mellanox NICs doing 650 gigabits per second. Does that change your enterprise attitude at all, Mike?
No. It's interesting. Oh. I mean, yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting. It's good. It's cool. It's, you know, but, no.
It does for me. Like, I could put that on my internet connection on an x86 server and punch in a 10 gig network and be home and hosed. I don't need to buy a hardware router for that anymore. Or I can put a virtual router in on an Amazon connection and get it done that way if I wanted to have a specific router for some reason.
What would make this really compelling for enterprises, and has nothing to do with technology, it has everything to do with the soft side of IT, is if, and I've said this before with SDN and with Whitebox, if a large VAR, a reseller, an integrator would come along and package all that stuff up and provide support and updates, upgrades, and either use it in their own channel or provide it to the channel. That would be that would be compelling for the enterprise.
So you want Red Hat to buy them to bring it?
Sure. I mean, enterprise.
That's the argument we had with Linux 10 years ago, and then we all went and bought it from Red Hat, and now very few people buy Red Hat. They're all using Ubuntu.
But they're still getting that support. They're not bootstrapping necessarily by themselves for most enterprises. They still want that comfort level. It's also it takes a long time for these products to mature and for enterprises to become comfortable, you know, supporting if they're going to bootstrap themselves.
All right. So I'm going to disagree with you. I can talk to plenty of enterprises. There are places where there are companies out there who do buy Red Hat because that's the only Linux that's got support. But increasingly, I can go to meetups and talk to people who run enterprises on Fedora or free Ubuntu or some form of Linux that makes sense for them, and they don't look for maintenance contracts or support on it at all.
Yeah, you're always going to find those long hairs out there, but
no. These are people who, you know, they've made the switch from buying commercial operating. They don't need the maintenance. They're just not talking about it in public. They don't write blog posts, sing songs, and tweet about it. They just get on with it.
Well, they should be because that's exactly what people need to understand. You can do it. It's just a lot of enterprises aren't doing it. That's my point. It's not that it's impossible.
Yeah, if you're looking at servers, it feels like it's a little bit lower risk, whereas your network is a little bit higher risk, and it's going to take some guts to put one of these, you know, in your DMZ and say, okay, this is it. Everything going in and out's going through this baby.
It doesn't take guts to save money.
it takes guts to change their operations. It's not impossible.
It takes guts to change your operations, and it takes guts to risk losing your job because you were the guy who pushed for this.
Speaking of DevOps and automation, Brocade this week bought startup StackStorm. So in the press release that Brocade published in their community forums, Brocade is proud to announce the acquisition of StackStorm, an industry leader in closed-loop, event-driven auto remediation. In other words, they help the time-consuming, error-prone human intervention for well-known IT events and alerts. So it looks like Brocade's finally starting to beef out its portfolio in automation.
I think this is an interesting acquisition. Brocade is obviously trying to, you know, beef up its profile as a software company in addition to being a networking company. Wonder though about event-driven remediation because, you know, having seen the security industry with IPS rolling out, but everybody deploys it with don't actually do anything for a while, like don't actually remediate, just let me see what's happening. And I think that's going to be the same thing here. I can't imagine a lot of folks automating a lot of remediations based on events from, you know, their monitoring and alerting systems.
I wonder how much of this is dependent, or how mature the detection, the determination of the problem, the root cause, and then the remediation is. Because I know with security event management systems, the initial products were pretty interesting in what they did, but man, they took a lot of care and feeding and a whole lot of very low level expertise in the data that was generated to understand and to react automatically. Significant.
There's quite a few startups in this space that are using, you know, databases. And I know Brocade's made a significant investment in machine learning. So perhaps StackStorm is a complement for that research and those products which are in the pipeline to do automated DevOps. Now, I know particularly carriers and service providers are very keen on this as a way of lowering the cost of operating their carrier networks. And so if you can combine DevOps and self-automation or, you know, self-orchestration processes and remove the humans, you can make a big difference. So what I see in that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's that expertise. I mean, again, I'm gonna ask you, Greg, I mean, because you've got, you know, you've done this, right? You've talked to these big carriers. I mean, they have the expertise to the deep expertise and knowledge to really take advantage of this stuff, right? This automation, right?
Yeah, the carriers actually don't. The bulk of the carriers are actually spent putting gear on trucks and racks and digging cables in the ground. They actually have a very small number of people actually operating the product. The purpose, the core thing that a carrier has is the rights to dig a cable in the ground. Anything to do with the network itself, the electricity that goes on the end of those cables is actually an overhead. It's not a profit center.
I just assumed that it would make sense that since it's overhead, that they would want to take advantage of automation wherever possible. And so that would sort of imply there's deep knowledge and understanding of to take advantage of it.
So did you have a look at the AT&T eComp white paper that they published a couple of weeks back?
Not yet.
It's basically an aspiration for automated operations. Yeah. So Brocade is playing into that. I wonder if this is a reaction to that, or I doubt it because it would have been in pipeline for some months to get to buy it today. But, you know, you do wonder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that's also interesting about this is that StackStorm is yet another open source project that's hoping to get some development support from the community. So they've got a community edition and also a paid for support edition. But this seems to be a pretty compelling model for folks. Start it up, throw it out as open source, get some free development help, and off you go.
Speaking about all things DevOps and composable, HPE got some more air miles this week with its HPE composable architecture. So Hewlett-Packard Enterprises believe it's got the only composable infrastructure in the enterprise, and this article from STX Central sort of highlights the key value points about it. Mike, your thoughts there?
They've been going down this – HPE's been going down this route for a while. They're trying to fit into whatever – technology model, enterprises, cloud scale companies, whoever is buying stuff, and they're competing against the DIY mindset of you know, using white box servers, white box switching, you know, white box storage, and then using software on top of it. So they're really going after that market pretty hard. They want to get in there. I haven't looked at the composable, the persistent memory side. I mean, that sounds pretty interesting, but I don't really have any thoughts on that yet. Yeah. I don't know if you guys looked into it at all.
I've got up close with it. It's sort of like you've got to believe in blade servers, and you've got to believe that hardware is the answer to all of the problems in the enterprise to some extent, that you don't know what you want your hardware to do and that the hardware really matters. So the ability to have, you know, 8x86 sleds and then a bunch of disaggregated network connectivity, fiber channel, InfiniBand, Ethernet, and then that's in the backplane, and then the sleds connect to the backplane. That's fundamentally composable infrastructure. We've sort of had it with the HP servers, especially the blade servers. They're sort of doubling down on that, and then they're putting in more hardware on the side to do the DevOps. So every blade chassis will have, you know, 6, 8, 12 sleds, but then there's two more servers on the side that do the provisioning of the servers that are in the chassis. And then you can build a fabric between the chassis, so then you don't have to have an Ethernet network. You can create it, and then it's all software controlled. But it's very much it looks a lot like Intel's rack scale architecture that they were promoting a while back. It's not exactly that, but it's in that same vein, that everything up happens at a rack level or at a and then you get where you want to be.
Is composable infrastructure just a marketing term? Is it the same thing as building a private cloud, or VMware might say a software-defined data center? Is that just their spin on it, or is there something essentially different about HPE's approach?
I think HPE's emphasizing its value, you know, its core value around those blade servers that it's got, mm-hmm. where, you know, if you buy a blade chassis and then rack it and then decide which sleds you put into it, very much what Cisco UCS is doing with its C-Series. The B-Series with the chassis and so forth. And the enterprise seems to really like that story, buy an empty chassis and then buy these custom modules that go into it. And the network is built into the back of the chassis, so then I don't actually have to worry about my networking stuff. Maybe the only interesting thing is that Synergy is the name of the composable infrastructure that HPE is proposing. Down the time, Memristors is a form of persistent memory. Apparently, there are other types of persistent memory coming. It will be available to have this persistent memory architecture. So you'll be able to have the memory in those blades and then be able to composably say, this memory is available to this server, this memory is available to this server. You don't have to say, today it's, you know, sled, so forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's certainly going to be a difficult sell. And again, a difficult sell is an expensive sell. That's my concern. You know, if it's difficult to explain, then you probably shouldn't be selling it. So let's take another break here to talk about our second sponsor for today's show, which is Interop. Now, it's only just a couple of weeks, 4 weeks away, and Interop is the leading independent IT conference. And the Packet Pushers are putting together a two-day Future of Networking Summit ahead of the main Interop Las Vegas conference. The goal of the summit is to identify current and emerging technologies that are going to affect the networking over the next 5 to 10 years. Don't tell me what you're doing today. Don't tell me what you did yesterday. Tell me what it's going to look like tomorrow. So we're going to have a bunch of special guests, and both Ethan and I will be talking. And we'll be talking about sort of the things that we talk about on the show, but trying to put it together into a coherent narrative that makes sense to you. We're going to be talking about advances in hardware, silicon, networking, SD-WAN containers, and much, much more. We're also going to be doing some live podcast recordings, and we're going to have an after-hours hangout where you can come and have a beers, and we can argue face-to-face if that's takes your fancy. Besides the Future of Networking Summit, Interop is also assembling a full slate of independent, top-notch content on security, virtualization, IT leadership, SDN, and more. So make your plans now to join us at Interop Las Vegas on May the 2nd through 6th at the beautiful Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Use the code PPUSHERS when you register and get 25% off any conference pass. We hope to see you there. Links to the actual sign-up pages will be in the show notes. Back to the conversation. So PlumGrid had an announcement this week around containers. Mike, this looks like one of yours.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're starting to see containers show up both as both companies targeting containers as a sort of a delivery platform for the products, as well as supporting containers within the networking infrastructure, and also with PlumGrid with their new version, they're adding in more analytics capabilities and focusing more on the UI side of things. So they're really starting to address a number of features that that their competitors have, and PlumGrid is bringing that to OpenStack networking.
Yeah, I was going to say the competitors have those features. So particularly Cisco ACI has had a big push around its container stuff recently, published a number of rather hard to understand blog posts on the topic. they're very not very comprehensible. They've obviously been edited fairly badly, but the analytics angle was one that I missed. And you think that's sort of like something that's a new twist on the overlay networking capabilities?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's a happy side effect. You know, network analytics, performance analytics are something that a lot of enterprises want. They don't want to pay for it because the stuff's very expensive. So with a lot of these SDN and SD-WAN products, they're getting more of that analytics just sort of naturally from the products themselves. It's a nice side effect. You can really sort of see what's going on much more deeply, and then start pairing that with a couple of vendors have started pairing that with collecting hardware analytics. So joining the virtual and physical, it may not be the thing that's going to sell the product, but it's a nice kind of, oh, that's a nice add-on, right?
Well, that was always the hope for SDN, is that we would have visibility and performance just should be built into it.
Yeah.
You know, configuring the network is only half of it. And you tell me you configure the network, but where's the confidence? How are you going to show me and reinforce to me that that's a valuable thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the next step is going to be taking that telemetry, that data from the network performance, and some of the SD-WAN products are starting to do that, and now start doing something intelligent with it that I don't have to go in and configure and make the changes for me. Interesting start.
And final one is maybe, Drew, you want to give us a bit of a touch of what Intel's been doing. You've been down at, what is it they call it, the cloud event?
Intel Cloud Day. All about Intel and the cloud, how Intel is facilitating and accelerating the cloud. They are making a giant push to let folks know just how deeply involved they are in making the cloud happen. One of the things they announced was a new Xeon processor, a big honkin' 22-core chip, so that you can do more cloudy stuff. They're also making a real push in networking. I think they feel like, as they see the rise of vSwitches and efforts they've got, like the DPDK, the Data Plane Development Kit, they feel like, hey, we can kind of own this virtual networking space. So that was very much a thrust of what they were talking about yesterday.
I've been to one of these events before, and it's just you just get shown some stuff, and then you realize how far ahead Intel's thinking in terms of influencing the market. Instead of, they're not just creating new technologies, they're actually bringing them to market and then putting significant investment in making it possible for customers to and vendors to activate that technology as well.
Absolutely. And one of the things they stressed is how deeply embedded they are with partners across a variety of spaces. So Cisco showed up on a bunch of slides, Arista, Juniper, all these folks, not to mention giant, international telcos and service providers. So they're saying, hey, we're here, we're relevant. This is our space, frankly.
Yeah, I've always said Intel's like an arms dealer. You know, they sell the weapons and then let somebody else go to war. So Cisco, HP, Dell, they've all got to fight it out with Intel's products, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I really do think that Intel sees a role for itself in the network, as we move to a network function virtualization world, especially on the provider side, but I think more increasingly in the enterprise as well. Mm. They also shared a little roadmap item. They're thinking about, they're toying with what they call a security controller. So instead of having a function like we talk about an SDN, a controller, but this is dedicated specifically to security to give you sort of a centralized location to manage and enforce all of the policy work that has to happen if you've got a bunch of virtual firewalls, a bunch of virtual IPSs, a bunch of virtual VPNs running around out at the edge, having a dedicated controller that's just for that security. That's not a product yet. They're roadmapping it, but the fact that they're thinking about it, I think, says a lot.
Well, I think we're seeing things like DPDK has been in the pipeline for 3 or 4 years, and that's the Data Plane Data Kit, which allows you to do hardware acceleration in the x86 CPU and the server chipsets, both on. And so that's really been a key thing. And they're now working on a thing called SGX, which is a security extensions to the CPU so that you can start to do security functions in hardware as well, in the silicon. But that's only still just emerging and going through the research community. It won't hit the market for some time. That's one of the interesting things about Intel is they'll happily spend years in the research community getting it right before they bring it to market, which is different to what we normally see where vendors have a good idea and then waft it around like a bit of a fart and says, who can smell that? Does that smell good? Can you smell that? Is that interesting?
Yeah, no, Intel is for real. And we talked about DPDK briefly, and that's – the story we talked about earlier, the cloud router, that's one of the reasons they're getting the kind of performance they are on is because they're leveraging the DPDK. Mm. Intel is, I think what they're saying is, hey, you know, the knock against a CPU, you know, a silicon platform versus an ASIC is that it's general purpose and you can't do a lot with it. They're saying, we're going to have this general purpose platform that you can run anything you want on it, but we're also sharing optimizations so that you can turn this Xeon into a packet processor, or you can turn it into a security accelerator. You can turn it to X, Y, and Z. So they're really throwing a lot of resources to say, yes, we've got a general purpose system, but we can tweak it and refine it to make it a competitor to, you know, special purpose silicon.
Yeah, well, it also seems like DPDK is becoming sort of a de facto standard or a must-have integration point, you know, because, you know, if it's working with Mellanox, I know it's working with some of the other NICs as well, just because it's Intel's sort of in that power position, right? They've got a LAN on motherboard, they've got the CPU, they have, you know, DPDK. If you're a competitive, you can make a competitive NIC and you can, or a competitive CPU, and you can plug into DPDK, it's supported in operating systems, most of your work is done. You can ride that wave for a long time.
But the thing from my point of view is that DPDK has been around, I couldn't say for sure, but I think 3 or 4 years at least. And I think it's at version 4 now. So it's not come to market and they're saying, doesn't this sound like a good idea, and trying to sort of, you know, get people to, they've actually been through a long, long time of engaging with people to make it work. Mm-hmm. And not just sort of releasing it onto the market and saying, there you go. They've been actively out there investing and spending money in the open source projects to get people to adopt this. They haven't just sort of put it out there and said, there you go, fingers crossed somebody will pick it up. They've actively said, you know, we're out there, we're promoting it, we're participating with open source. They put developers and the money behind developers to go into projects to use DPDK and help developers get it into their code. Mm-hmm. And that's what's unique, unlike perhaps the, you know, we talk about these open, I make a joke about these open foundations which seem to pop up every week.
Yes.
You know, perhaps that's where the open foundations come from, is they looked at the Intel model. Intel is generally an innovative company in the sense of the way it attacks the market. It has a long-term view. It's willing to invest in ideas for year after year, not quarter by quarter. And they tend to win in the longer term. And maybe these foundations are a step in that direction, so that if you are living in a quarter-by-quarter company, you can actually get some year-over-year momentum behind certain potential business aspect, you know, grow areas of growth.
Oh, so you're saying long-term vision combined with an openness to allow others to play in your ecosystem and to support these bigger technologies is actually beneficial?
I'm suggesting that that's possibly the case.
Yeah.
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 Hello, product managers, if you're listening, I don't buy products on a quarter by quarter basis. I know your shareholders do, and I know your personal rewards are, but actually what we want to see is year over year innovation, not quarter by quarter. Hello. All right. One final thing in the business news. It was a quiet week on the business front, all of the information. There was one article, though, where the Chinese company Huawei posted a hefty profit, even though they made an embarrassing goof up on the foreign exchange, a $670 million Forex loss. They still did very well overall, although specifically the smartphone sales was a big key. They did over $19 billion worth of handsets. I just want you to think about that.
Well, Huawei is a huge company.
Exactly.
we just don't hear, we don't hear about them a whole lot in the U.S. except for fear mongering. But they're a humongous company. Cisco and HP and Juniper should be looking at them really hard because they're all losing share and Huawei's growing.
Yeah.
In networking, in networking alone, not everything else.
Yeah, well, I've read a couple of articles over the last 2 or 3 months where entire country carriers, that is the incumbents, like in Italy and Spain, have actually just completely switched to Huawei away from Cisco and Juniper and the others. Like, you're talking, you know, big hundreds of millions of dollars worth of revenue just moved into to Huawei because of price. And they're happy to go with it and work it out. So, you know, that is a problem. I agree. And what I'm trying to say is there is evidence to suggest that that's actually becoming an established trend. You're right, not in the US, but outside of the US, certainly it's true.
It's price and features, but it's also sort of going on the just the previous conversation. Huawei's been actually very active in a lot of open source projects, a lot of open source communities. I mean, they're really making the effort to be a global player. So that's helping a lot.
Well, I think that's just about it for today. Thanks very much for joining us on the Network Break. Thanks to Interop for sponsoring today's show. You can come and join us in Interop Las Vegas in just 4 weeks' time. If you head over to Interop's webpage at ubm.com, you can get 25% off by using the code PPushers. Please do that. Come and see us. And also thanks to IT Pro TV. They sponsored this episode of Network Break, and you can gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare you for your certification. Remember, you can try IT Pro TV free for 7 days when you use our code NETWORKBREAK30, and you can also receive 30% off the lifetime at, that's just $40 a month. Just visit itpro.tv/networkbreak, use the code NETWORKBREAK30 and try it free for 7 days and save 30% off the life of your account. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. Where can folks get more from you?
So Twitter, at mprado, is my Twitter account, and then on LinkedIn if you're so inclined.
Thanks. And Drew?
On Twitter at Drew_CM, and of course you can find my blogs at packetpushers.net, and I'll be talking at you again next week on the Network Break.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, please like us on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share a link with your colleague. Also, check out our newsletters, the Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. You can find those links at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.